G'day and welcome to a US of Ed special on the big issues of the 2020 campaign. The issues where the Senate race, in particular, is so important. Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider, an internationally recognised leader in urban development and planning, advisor, author, and one of the two hosts on this podcast. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. We're joined this week by Dana Rawls and Stephanie Zuniga-Marr. Dana Rawls is a researcher, writer, and editor with 20 years of media and communications experience. A global citizen, she has worked in several countries and has a passionate interest in technology, media, and human rights, and how they work together to contribute to humanity's social and economic development. Stephanie Zuniga-Marr is a native of Washington, D.C., with a lifelong interest in politics. She was nearly born in the White House during the Carter administration and volunteered on the Clinton campaign in high school. She holds a BA in political science from Duke University and a master's degree from the University of Sydney. She currently resides in Sydney, Australia, and works in the talent, people, and culture industry. She remains politically active in Democrats Abroad Australia, Global Black Caucus Chair. With COVID having ravaged the United States over the past 8-9 months, Ed, just how central is healthcare to the 2020 election campaign?
Well, let's look at this from the broadest possible perspective. Millions of people have been thrown off the so-called Affordable Act Obamacare plan already. Many people don't have nearly enough healthcare and no access to it. And if they have a pre-existing condition, limited access. So now the Republicans, having failed to knock out affordable care with no other plan in sight, want to go to the Supreme Court to knock out this very important act in the midst of a global pandemic. So there couldn't be anything more important than people's health. I think it is the first issue in the nation surpassing any other. 30 million Americans would be affected if they get their way. And most of those people have no alternative.
Dana, who is most at threat of losing out on healthcare?
I think definitely that would be minority groups. That would be the poor, the disabled, people who are already negatively affected by a lack of healthcare overall. COVID has really brought into very, very stark relief how the disparities in healthcare disproportionately affect minority communities, disproportionately affect poor communities. And these are the groups that will be the hardest hit by any efforts to gut or dismantle the Affordable Care Act.
It seems to me like when we've been discussing COVID-19, the vaccine, the death toll, the health costs associated with that, has the bigger picture on healthcare gotten lost with the focus on COVID?
In part, because the bigger picture is the United States is alone, is the only nation in the world that does not have a national health plan that covers every citizen. Alone, that's not an enviable record to have. Particularly when right next door, there's Canada, even Mexico. So this is a travesty. Healthcare is about 15 to 25% of every American's budget in one way or another. And I say health, not just medicine, going to the gym, all this kind of thing, getting the right diets and the like. So this is an issue next to housing, I would say, as the biggest issue in the world. And the United States needs to make a lot of progress on the housing issue as well.
And you're absolutely right about that, Ed. I mean, we have seen for decades now that the fastest way to have to declare bankruptcy in the United States is to get sick, to have a heart attack, to have a debilitating illness. And this has been an issue for decades. And the Affordable Care Act has been the closest that we've come to addressing and creating that national healthcare plan that you have just spoken about. And it has been under constant attack. It was attacked before it got passed. It's been attacked almost regularly since then. And we need to ensure that it sticks around. And if anything changes, that it's actually bolstered, that it's improved, not dismantled.
Well, why are people against it, Stephanie? Why not have a health plan? Because people get sick, they get you, make you sick.
Well, that's true. And I think for Australia, for most people around the world, for most Australians, most people from the UK or Ireland or most nations, as you mentioned, it seems ludicrous that people in America can't go to the doctor for free or can't go see someone when they get sick. You know, I've had many Australian friends go over on holidays and to the US and talk about, you know, having to get health insurance just in case. And they sort of say, well, what, you know, how much would it cost if I break my leg and have to go to the hospital? It's like, well, you know, you could be paying those bills for many, many, many years to come. And I think it is shocking. It is absolutely shocking, but it gets branded as socialism, which of course, due to, you know, the Red Scare in the 50s and this whole anti-communist attitude in the US, once you label it socialism, it must be a bad thing. And without people actually digging into what does that mean? What does it mean to have affordable healthcare and universal healthcare? People hear socialism and it's like, oh no, you're trying to turn us into the Soviet Union in the 1960s with bread lines and everything else. So I think they've really found those trigger words.
There's one other thing here. And I've heard this living in California. I don't want no Mexican to get healthcare that I have to pay for. Yes. Now, if you're in Mississippi, use the N-word. Hmm. And what I say to those people, yeah, you're absolutely right. And if they catch a cold, they'll give you pneumonia.
Socialism, the dirtiest word in the American language. The jobs picture in the United States, again, this relates to COVID and the associated downturn we've seen. Unemployment currently sitting at 8.4%, but that's really doesn't tell us anywhere near the full story. What is the job picture at the moment?
Well, we had a phony job situation when it was down to 3% because many people were working two jobs to make ends meet. You could not work on the minimum wage and live in an apartment. No way. It'd take two or three people to do that. So people took two or three jobs. And that's just for housing. Now, what jobs went away when COVID hit? The jobs in the bars, the hotels, the restaurants, and the like. So this hit minorities disproportionately. But before we got there, we did something really smart for jobs. We made the biggest tax cut in the history of the world, giving the top 10% of Americans more money than they knew what to do with. And what did they do with it? They bought the stock in their own companies. They bought new assets. Did they hire anybody? No. So had that money been used to build new infrastructure and quality infrastructure, there'd be air conditioning and school buildings and things like this, and you could actually go back to school, even with COVID, and in your office building. But they didn't use the money for that. And the United States has the largest wealth, maldistribution of wealth of any country in the world. So the poor pay more, and there are more people becoming poor. That 8% unemployment rate comes about because people have stopped looking for jobs. It's not that that's a real percentage at all.
What kind of jobs are we going to need to see in order to see this situation improve?
Well, we got to start from the bottom. We have to rebuild the nation's infrastructure. I'm the only one on the show who remembers that after the Second World War, and even before it, we built great infrastructure. Eisenhower started it, building freeways. Now, they're not the thing today, but that also built neighborhoods. It rebuilt neighborhoods. It created infrastructure on which jobs could be built. Factories were built and the like. All that infrastructure has been run down. So the first thing we have to do is rebuild that infrastructure. As Joe Biden says, better. We don't just put in a freeway. We put a light rail down the middle of it. We don't put more concrete on the road. We rubberize it and make sure it absorbs the sun rays and the light. We rebuild our schools. Actually, if we built a school to make it COVID safe, it'd just be a good school. Because now the schools are built as boxes with no windows.
Exactly, yes.
So America has to be rebuilt. We don't have to have the world's greatest trade policy. When I worked in New Orleans, I said, what we have to do is not invest out, but invest in. So we didn't send work. It drove me crazy that people wanted to order food from outside New Orleans. Can you imagine ordering food from outside New Orleans? First, people in New Orleans wouldn't eat it. But when you got Louisiana and all that land and all that water, and you can't grow food, something's wrong.
Something is terribly wrong, yes.
So we need to invest, inside invest. Invest in a better education, starting in the first years. There's nothing wrong with having two teachers in a classroom. There's nothing wrong with automating our libraries. There's nothing wrong, as California's gonna do, is move to all electric cars. Nothing wrong with that, because that means you have to have power stations and the like, and you can't build them. So that means more sustainable energy sources and the like. So I wish Joe would articulate this more clearly, but I think that is the message. Build the next Detroit as the Detroit for the world, for better automobiles, not more and bigger.
And I think that's a great point, Ed, that you talk about sustainability, because climate change, you know, it's real. We're seeing, you know, storms, we're seeing global warming, we're seeing all the hallmarks of climate change. And it's gotten to the point where most people who believe in science can't deny that it's a fact. So as the US rebuilds, we need to look at how do we do that in the best interest for the planet, not just for the pocket.
But how do we get people? Bernie's not running right now. Bernie carried that message. Mm-hmm. How do we get people to understand that the fight is not with China? Mm-hmm. The fight is not a better world trade policy. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, African Americans are the largest trading entity in the United States. We buy more than any other country, wow, internal in the United States than any other country. We buy more than England, France, Germany. Hmm. So if African Americans got better pay and bought more, there'd be more jobs for Americans.
That's a phenomenal point. And I do think, going back to COVID, Sean, your question about where do we need to rebuild? I think COVID has really shown where the important industries are, and exactly what Ed is saying about engineering and education. But I think it's also shown who the important workers are. It's the people driving the buses, it's transit workers, it's people who are stocking shelves in your grocery stores, who are doing these jobs that I think for a long time that we just kind of overlooked and saw as kind of menial jobs. But I think COVID has shown that these are the jobs, these are the workers, these are the people that the country needs. It's not the thought leader on LinkedIn. It's not the CEO necessarily of some massive global organization. It's these transit workers. It's these people that we have kind of overlooked and that society and that the economy has overlooked. These are the people that we need to be investing, as Ed said, investing in to bring the country back so that we can keep moving forward.
Yeah, not outsource, insource.
Absolutely.
Voting rights have become a key issue in this campaign, with attacks particularly on mail-in voting. Back in March, we saw a Democrat-led push for voting reforms around COVID, such as vote by mail, same-day registration, early voting. Donald Trump made a rare admission around these reforms. He admitted Democrats were pushing for levels of voting that if you ever agreed to it, you'd never have a Republican elected in this country again. Stephanie.
He told the truth.
Yeah. Stephanie, where are we sitting at the moment in terms of voting rights?
Look, voting rights are under threat. Just in terms of voter suppression, in terms of voter disenfranchisement, in terms of voter intimidation. What we're seeing at the moment is absolutely unprecedented in terms of, in Florida, making felons have to pay what equates to a poll tax to get re-registered to vote. We're seeing outside polling places in Virginia, Trump supporters picketing and protesting as people are trying to go in to cast their ballot. I cannot remember a time in the last 40 years during my lifetime where we've seen this level of voter suppression in the US. Certainly not since, I would say, the 60s and the Voting Rights Act was passed, have we seen anything like this. And I think it is because Trump knows that if everyone who wanted to vote could vote, he would lose and his party would lose. And it's a sad, scary state of affairs that this is going on in America, which used to be the shining light for democracy around the world. And that's, it's just a very scary time in terms of voting rights in America.
We ought to turn it around.
Yes.
Require people to vote.
Compulsory voting.
Compulsory voting. Mm. If there's compulsory military service, why not compulsory voting?
Mm. Absolutely.
Dana, this is a state-by-state issue as well. Where are we seeing particular problems, and what kind of tactics are we seeing in use?
Well, speaking as a person who votes in the great state of Georgia, I can say without any hesitation that Georgia has had a huge issue this year. But since 2008, a lot of states have put forth various measures to make it more difficult to vote. And as Stephanie mentioned, voter suppression, the purging of voter rolls, these types of things. But the great state of Georgia has, in its primary this year, I think took unprecedented steps. There was lack of actual voting locations. So people where there may have been, 4 years ago or 2 years ago, there was a poll down the road that you could stop off on the way to work or whatever and go and vote. Suddenly those were closed. Many people who requested absentee ballots did not receive them in the Georgia primary for this year. At places where there were polls, many of the staff were untrained and the equipment didn't work. The website that was run by the state of Georgia to put information out, letting people know where they needed to be, when they needed to be there, and what they needed to be doing, was frequently down. It was absolutely astonishing. And in a lot of precincts, in addition to the website not working and having inadequately trained staff, they actually ran out of ballots in quite a few of the precincts.
Well, they were expecting Black people to vote. Please. I mean, why would you have ballots there?
They did everything but set these buildings on fire to keep people from voting. And I know there have been lots of states, Stephanie mentioned the intimidation that's going on right now in Virginia. There have been some issues in various places around the country, but maybe it's because of my own personal state, but Georgia has to be in the top three, if not the sole source of a lot of issues this year. And I'm just praying. I put my ballot in the mail the same day that I got it. So that was last Friday on the 18th of September. I'm praying to the mail gods, to everyone, that my ballot gets there in time and that it's counted. And here we are, 6 weeks away from the election, and I have no confidence that it will get there in time.
It's just to circle back on one more aspect of the voting process that I guess suppresses a lot of people who would like to vote, is voting takes place on a Tuesday. If yeah. you're working in a minimum wage or a non-professional job, whether it's stacking shelves, whether it's at a cafe, whether it's, you know, any of these jobs where you can't take off an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours out of your day to go and vote, that impacts people who are able to go and vote. And so then you get this whole skew towards more professional, higher paid, often non-people of color who can have the luxury of taking the time to go and vote. So what we're seeing this year, thank goodness, is a lot of forward-thinking companies actually giving their employees a day off to vote. But this whole notion of everyone can take a Tuesday off to take 2 hours to go line up outside of a polling place, that's not true. It's just
exactly. The mail, because of COVID, a lot more states, what about 35 states now have mail?
Yes.
The rules vary from state to state. So we can go to your website and find out which rules apply. But if you're Black, it might not be safe to go to the polls anyway. So I trust the U.S. mail more than I would going down a poll in rural Georgia.
Exactly. But even with this current Postmaster General, who has done everything in his power to stymie and stifle and slow everything down?
Well, I think there are two things there. One of them is postal balloting can take place anywhere, and there are postal drop boxes. So you might have to, this is one thing young people can do. They can drive people to the drop box or take their ballot to the drop box or take it right into the county facility. I did that when I was running for office. I had my people go to the senior citizens' homes, collect their, make sure they filled out their ballots carefully, looked over their shoulders. You can't tell them how to vote. Made sure they did it right, collected the ballots up, and then took them down to the county office directly and put them in the drop box there. In some rural towns, that might be the post office. Mm-hmm. Bypass the local place because they don't want to see you there. But this does create an opening, and I think your website, for people who are out of the country, you can always vote. And the fact that you left the country and this and that and another thing, as long as you got an address, you can vote. Mm-hmm. They're not going to track you for your taxes or the fact you had a speeding ticket when you were 16 or any of that kind of stuff. If you got an address and an American citizenship in a town or a place, you can vote.
And you should vote.
And must vote.
And must vote, yes, absolutely.
Well, so the makeup of the Senate could be a good deal more important than who ends up in the White House. Stephanie, how are people getting mobilized on these issues?
Look, I think the fact that there are 23 Republicans who are up for re-election this term, and I think about 9 of them are in close races, hopefully that's enough to motivate people to see there is an opening that we can flip the Senate, the Democrats can take back the Senate. For people who aren't aware of that, that is a fact that with those seats, if they change hands and the Democrats hold, we can control the Senate, which means a lot more of a balance of power if we do have a
Republican. We might even have some new members of the Supreme Court.
Well, yes.
True. That is another.
I love the Republicans. You know, they mix the poison and then we'll give it to them to drink.
That's right.
Well, so, as you say, very important to get out there, vote. You know, vote as many times as they'll let you. Dana, Stephanie,
according to the president.
Dana, Stephanie, thank you very much for joining Ed and myself again on this one.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Thanks very much, guys.
Take care. Vote.
Big thanks to Dana and Stephanie from Democrats Abroad for joining us this week on the special. Ed and I will be back with one of our regularly scheduled podcasts later on in the week and some more specials quite possibly in the near future. Subscribe so you don't miss out wherever you might find the podcast. Drop us a review if you're feeling generous. And check us out on Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed.